Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, and good night. This is Anthony Bryce, the host of 6 Degrees. 6 Degrees absolutely is about connecting, and we are all so very connected in this world. Through dialogue, those essential connections are revealed. And tonight, for the second time, we have Lloyd Pye on. Lloyd Pye is a research coordinator and founder of the Star Child Project. What is the Star, first and foremost, what is the Star Child Project, and what is the Star Child? The Star Child skull is a unique 900-year-old bone skull that was found in Mexico in the 1930s. And the Star Child Project is an informal organization which began in 1999 when Ray and Melanie Young, the owners of the Star Child skull, asked Lloyd Pye to head research efforts to determine what caused the unusual shape and properties of the bone. The results uncovered by Pye's team ruled out all known deformities and presented the scientific community with a bone profile never before seen on Earth. I will repeat, a bone profile never before seen on Earth. Now, who is Lloyd Pye, besides being a wonderful man in spirit that, with so much determination, and you all are going to love Lloyd Pye. He became involved with the Star Child School, like we said, in 1999, and, of course, founded the Star Child Project in February of that year. He is the chief USA fundraiser, the international spokesperson, and research coordinator. He's also written the seminal book on the skull, which is titled The Star Child Skull, which you all can purchase on this, on Blog Talk Radio, on this website, as well as on Amazon. The Star Child skull has appeared on numerous television documentaries, on national and international radio, and Lloyd has written a series of articles for publications in the USA, Canada, UK, Australia, New Zealand, Italy, Japan, Brazil, world. This is Lloyd Pye. Lloyd Pye, this is the world on 6 Degrees. How are you doing tonight, Lloyd?
Well, I'm doing good, and thank you very much. I have to tell you, Anthony, that's just about the best introduction I've ever had, and I've had probably a couple hundred of them, so thank you for that.
Oh, you're so very welcome, Lloyd. We talked before in January of 2007 or 2008. Oh, boy, I can't even keep the year straight. I think it was January of 2008. And it basically left off in the end of the show with looking for funding and documentaries and also looking for funding for the genetic analysis of the Star Child skull. But before we get into that, I would like to let the live listeners out there know that you can call in and talk to Lloyd at 646-915-9567. And also, the archived and live listeners can track and go in a little deeper with the Star Child Project on. Lloyd, go ahead. What's the website?
www.starchildproject, all one word, starchildproject.com.
Lloyd, I love the word starchild. I mean, why did you call this skull the Star Child?
Well, I have to tell you, Anthony, in all honesty, it was one of the biggest mistakes that we made, and we made it right out of the box. It was a terrible mistake in terms of dealing with credibility issues among scientists, because once it had that name, it stuck. But the way it happened was, when I first saw the skull, when Ray and Melanie, whom you mentioned in the introduction, when Ray and Melanie Young invited me to come to El Paso, that they had something that they wanted to show me, I had no idea what it was. I was at that point a hominoid and human origins researcher, and I really had nothing to do with UFOs or aliens. I mean, I had nothing against it. I certainly believed them and believed in them, but I wasn't an area of interest for me. So I assumed what they wanted to show me was something relating to what I did, which was hominoids or human origins. But when I got there and I saw the skulls and I knew enough about skulls because of my hominoid research to know how very, very unusual at that time, the strange one was. So I took it immediately from there, once we agreed that I would try to find out scientifically what it was. I was on my way at that time to the big UFO Congress in Laughlin, Nevada, which is the largest event of its kind in the States each year, and that was just pure coincidence. So it goes on for a week. You have about 30 speakers in the course of that week. So all the gathering of much of the cream of the UFO and alien research crop was at that convention where I was going to speak. So I brought the skulls with me. I showed many of the top players in the field. I showed it to them, and I said, you know, what do you think? And they said, boy, we think this is really special, but we need to figure out what it was. So I took it. I had a friend take it to Las Vegas to get some x-rays, and when they came back, the little piece of maxilla, the upper right jaw that went with the star child, had shown that while there were two teeth down, still in the bone, and there had been, you could see the holes of three teeth that had come loose, been knocked out, and there were teeth up in the bone, up in the maxilla, ready to come down. So the lab tech, the x-ray tech that did the work said, oh, well, look, if you're looking at teeth down and teeth up, that's got to be a child 5 or 6 years old. And it made sense. We had not at that point had any experts look at the teeth to tell us that the teeth were clearly the teeth of adult people, and the x-ray tech, he didn't have enough expertise to know that. So he said, it's a child, 5 or 6 years old, got to be. So when we got that word back there to the Congress, the idea was, well, why not call it the Star Child? And so, yeah, okay, well, that sounds good. They said it's got to have a name. It's got to be snazzy. It's got to get people's attention. So called it the Star Child. But then after that was stuck, I announced it, went on radio shows and all that, as I tried to get scientists to take a look at it. As soon as I would mention that name, Star Child, boom, the phone would go down, door would close, whatever. The assumption was, this can't possibly be worth my time and my energy and my effort. This has to be a hoax. This has to be a fraud. This is some kind of a scam deal. So I, as a serious scientist, can't have anything to do with it. So it was extremely hard to overcome that mistake. And frankly, Anthony, to this moment, as I sit here talking to you, it's still one of the biggest albatrosses that hang around this whole project, is that name, the Star Child. For those of us in the alternative community, as you say, it's a wonderful name. It's beautifully evocative. And more importantly, I think it's going to prove to be exactly right. Not that it was a child when it died, but I believe it was a child of the stars. It did come from the stars in the fact that I believe it was a human-alien hybrid. But in terms of helping us get the kind of assistance and aid that we've needed all along the way from scientists, it's been a huge hurdle, a huge burden to carry.
Well, you know, Lloyd, you're a man of vision and a man of purpose, as is revealed in your book, The Star Child Skull. And you also say that it's a genetic enigma, and you pose the question, is it a genetic enigma or a human-alien hybrid? Why would you pose that question?
Well, because, you know, frankly, to be honest with you, we have to try to give a sense of objectivity in what we're dealing with here, so that it doesn't sound like we've made up our minds or it's a foregone conclusion or anything like that. But the truth of it is that, indeed, I mean, my mind is made up, and it's been made up since 2003, frankly, when we had the DNA test done by Trace Genetics. And when they produced the result that they produced, which was that the Star Child's mitochondrial DNA was very easy to recover, and it was indeed from a human being, but its nuclear DNA, which should have been equally easy to recover, could not be recovered by human-only primers. So that told us immediately that the father wasn't human. But to say in 2003 that we're not getting a recovery of nuclear DNA from an unknown sample, there was no proof that it wasn't because the DNA was degraded, even though you had the clear evidence of the mitochondrial DNA recovering very easily and the mitochondrial DNA and the nuclear DNA of the human found with the star child. Also, both of those recovered very easily. What that means is the DNA is good. The DNA is viable. It's not degraded. And they were buried for 900 years in a mine tunnel. So there's no way that it would be degraded. They're not getting rained on. They're not getting frozen. They're not getting baked by the sun. They're like in a climate control storage locker. It's good quality DNA. The problem was that the primers were not able to recover it because they're designed to recover only human DNA. So we know the mother's human. It has to be that the father is not human. So that's why we say, and frankly we know, the star child is a product of a human alien conception of some kind. I doubt very seriously that it would have resulted from a sexual union. I am very confident that it is the result of genetic engineering, just the way I am equally confident that human beings are the product of genetic engineering. So, based on what I know about it, and I know quite a bit about it. So it's just a matter of lining things up so that we can prove beyond a shadow of a doubt so that it can't be argued about by scientists, and that is what the test that's available to us now from 454 Life Sciences, from that technology, we have the ability to recover the star child's entire genome and lay it down beside a human genome, a chimp genome, gorilla genome, and very soon the Neanderthal genome. So when we have all that, we will be able to show beyond a shadow of a doubt, so that there's no room for argument, exactly where the star child falls in relation to a normal human being. And personally, I think it could fall easily beyond a chimp in terms of difference, or beyond a gorilla even in terms of difference. It could fall beyond that. It is so physiologically different from a human being. 24 major physiological differences in the head alone, in the skull alone. You extrapolate that down through a whole body, and you are looking at millions and millions of base pairs different. And you have 90 million base pairs different between us and a chimp. You have 150 million base pairs different between us and a gorilla. And I think the star child has a very good chance to go over the 200 million mark or more.
That's basically, without a shadow of a doubt, what you have in your possession, the star child skull, is one of the most credible evidence on planet Earth that other beings exist, or beings exist other than humans on this planet, or have existed. And that really, Lloyd, my question is, where'd it come from? Can you tell the story a little bit so people kind of have a broad-eyed view of, where they found it? Because it's just
sure.
Because it's so far different. My point is, just because it's so far different doesn't mean that maybe it could have been something that's extinct.
Right. No, it was found in Mexico in about 1930 by a young girl who was at that time from El Paso, but her parents had come from Mexico, from this small village about 100 miles southwest of Chihuahua. And her parents, when she was a teenager, took her and her siblings back to that village to visit for the first time. And when they got there, the kids were told not to go in the mine tunnels or the caves in the area because it was dangerous. But she, she snuck off anyway to do some exploring, and in a mine tunnel considerable distance from the village, she found a human skeleton lying on its back in the mine tunnel, and beside it was a grave, a shallow grave, with what she called a misshapen hand sticking out of the grave. And that hand was wrapped around the upper arm bone of the person who had died and on the surface of the floor. So she tried to recover both. She dug the one that was in the grave out, and she found that it had a misshapen body to go along with the misshapen hand and a misshapen skull, and And that, of course, turned out to be the Star Child. She tried to recover both skeletons, but she hid them, trying to figure out how to sneak them back into the States with nobody knowing she had them. And a huge rainstorm came and created a flash flood, which washed all the bones away from her hiding place. And she found them, the two skulls, downstream in the piece of detached maxilla. She found them downstream and just collected them, and that was it. She quit looking happy to have them, snuck the skulls back, kept them her whole life, thinking that they were just, that the odd one was just a human deformity, like anybody would think that. And so then when she was dying in the early 90s in old age, she willed them to a set of friends of hers, a man and a woman, and they kept them for about 5 years, and then they became uncomfortable with them and gave them to Ray and Melanie Young. Reason being, Melanie had been a neonatal nurse and was very familiar with deformity, and they figured, well, she wouldn't have a problem with that, and she didn't. She didn't. They said, oh, no problem. We'll take them. Not a problem. But when they saw the skulls, when Melanie saw the skulls, her experience, her long experience with human deformity, told her immediately this wasn't a typical deformity, because the skull was way too light for what, you know, what it should weigh. But most importantly, just a quick glance at it, it was way too symmetrical. It was just perfectly symmetrical. And generally, deformity, if it's one thing, it's asymmetrical. It doesn't really look neat or well put together, or, you know, it doesn't look nice. And the Star Child, for as bizarre as it looks and is, it's absolutely well put together. It's very precisely symmetrical. So she was given to the idea that it wasn't a deformity, and more importantly, she and her husband, Ray, were both members of the local MUFON chapter, the Mutual UFO Network of El Paso. And so they had been exposed to a lot of alien and UFO information, and they looked at that skull and they said, you know, this thing could go and fit perfectly right inside the head of a gray, a typical gray alien, because it had the bulbous top, the crease down the middle of that top, and narrowing down into a very thin, thin, small lower face, the typical, quote, heart-shaped face of your standard typical gray. So they got the idea that it could be the skull of a gray alien, and that's why they contacted me to see if I would take it out into the world of science and see if we could get an official determination one way or the other that would prove it, that it was a deformity, or prove that it was something else. And so here we are 11 years later, still trying to do that, but really hot on the trail, because we proved it to my satisfaction in 2003, but not to the satisfaction of hardcore mainstream science. But now we're in position, as I said, with this test from 454 Life Science with their technology, to prove it beyond the shadow of a doubt, beyond the point where science, which, as you know, their knee-jerk reaction to anything relative to UFO and alien is to just say, oh, that can't be true, oh, that can't exist, because we don't accept that it exists, and so therefore it can't exist. This is the kind of evidence DNA is that we can just cram down their throats, kicking and screaming. It doesn't matter how much they gag on it. They have to swallow it and deal with it. And so that's the position that we're in. We're in the catbird seat. It's just a matter of getting the money to do the test and pay for the documentary that has to be filmed around it, because you can't just do a test like this and not film every step of the way, or the answer would not be accepted. So when we have the money to pay for the testing and pay for the filming and get it all put together in one package, and that, by the way, is a total of about $500,000, so it's very serious money, but it isn't nearly the millions of dollars it would have been back in 2003 if we had started or tried to start at the same time that they began to use that technology to recover the Neanderthal genome. So we're in really good shape, Anthony, right now. The best we've ever been in. The price, $500,000, is, you know, we all know of many people are out there that can go to Vegas or Monte Carlo on a bad weekend and blow that much and, you know, not even think about it. So it's just putting this information in the hands of the right people, with the right kind of interest in it, and we'll get it done.
You know, Lloyd, your work is going to shift. You know, this whole month on 6 Degrees, we're focusing on UFO disclosure and actually the, you know, the path to disclosure. And the Star Child skull is a key, is a true key toward that process. Once disclosure is made, you know, the world's going to be, it's kind of, you know, it's going to be like before Newton discovered gravity and after Newton discovered gravity, before Einstein discovered relativity and after Einstein discovered relativity, you know, before the Civil Rights Movement and after the Civil Rights Movement. The bottom line is we're going to have a world pre-disclosure, pre-UFO or pre-advanced beam disclosure, and a world post-advanced beam disclosure. And your work and your research is going to prove to be just as significant as any man who has changed the course of history, Lloyd. Your lessons and the grand lessons to humanity that you've learned in during this course in time, in particular the barriers to academia, how can you, what have you learned? What are some of your grand lessons to humanity?
Well, one of the things is, the main thing I've learned probably is don't trust experts. Just don't trust experts, because they have a vested in, started this. I thought that this would be so powerful, so overwhelming, that we'd have, you know, people lining up to help us with it. I mean, that is how it seemed to me. But I have found out that what they line up to do is to thwart us for the most part. Now, this is, you know, not true with all of them, but maybe 1 in 10 I would find would be willing to help, would just didn't care, had true courage, had true scientific desire to know the truth or to find out. But generally, the people that helped were people who were near retirement or have a whole lot to lose relative to their peers, because they fully understand what peer pressure will do to you if you are in the scientific community and you acknowledge in any way that you might accept the reality of UFOs or aliens. So what I found is that for the most part, scientists are terrified of the censure of their peers. And whether they in private tell me, now look, I'm going to tell you what I know, but you can't tell anybody that I told you, whether it's that kind of guy or whether it's somebody just says, look, I want to know. I'm going to dig into this for you, and yes, you can use my name. Very, very few of those, and I treasure them all like, you know, golden nuggets, because that's what they were. Very, very rare, I found in the world of science. Courage, just plain old-fashioned courage.
And that's the bottom line, courage. You know, courage to stand up against the grain. I think maybe people don't have this courage because they find themselves to lose maybe the comfort zone of academia, the comfort zone of whatever they've strived to be in this world. And
they'll lose a lot more than their comfort zone, Anthony. They'll be really censured. They can be fired. If they don't have tenure, they won't get it. If, like John Mack, for example, you're world famous and you have tenure and you're at Harvard and you acknowledge that UFOs or aliens might be real, the next thing you know, you're up against a tribunal trying to take away your tenure at Harvard. That's what he was up against. And anybody, you know, Jeff Meldrum, who does this research in hominoids at the University of Idaho, and as soon as he came out in favor of, you know, doing research about the reality of Bigfoot, they tried to throw him out. Academia plays hardball, and they don't take prisoners. Anybody that steps out of line is subject to being thrown out of the club, and you have to be very, very sure of yourself. You have to be very, very sure of your position, or you just can't make it. But I think that the PhD programs of the world have a self-regulating effect built within them. Graduate students are around superiors so much that any of them that think for themselves are quickly weeded out. I mean, they do not want independent thinkers in the PhD programs of the world. They want lockstep. They want think like everybody else. So the ones like me or you or anybody else that would get there and have a streak of independence, a streak of individuality, that isn't going to fly. They're going to wash you out. You'll be cut out of the program. The only ones that make it through generally are the ones that will walk in lockstep with everybody else. The programs are set up to have that come out as a final product, a thoroughly brainwashed, for the most part, martinet who's going to go along with the program that's been laid down by their superiors.
Well, when we get, we're already halfway through the show, Lloyd. When we get back from the from our break, I want to get into some of the Star Child Project basics, which are really online here, because I want to point the listening audience to the StarChildProject.com, where they can get some of that in your face evidence that is necessary to kind of shift our world's consciousness, and so they can truly understand that that this is a reality that that deserves to be investigated on the academic level, just as
sure whatever you want to talk about. That's what I'm here for.
Yes, sir.
Access your forgotten abilities to create a happy and joyful life that is filled with abundance through the Law of Attraction Radio Network. Listen to shows that will inspire and uplift your consciousness, required to fulfill your desires, by downloading your favorite shows to your MP3 player. Join us at loaradionetwork.com. That's loaradionetwork.com. Come aboard. Join us for a very exciting and transformative experience on Law of Attraction Radio Network's Cruise to Transformation. All of our talk show hosts are inviting you to their workshops aboard Carnival Cruise Lines out of the Port of San Diego to Ensenada, located in Baja California. 3 glorious nights aboard the cruise ship Elation as we depart on November 6, 2009. We will mix and mingle and learn together as our team of experts set out to take you on a mystical journey of transformation. You will understand how truly magnificent you are as you discover the awesome power of your connection to the field through sheer joy. We want you to come because through you, this knowledge will ripple out to the world. The entire 3-day cruise is so affordable you can even request payments. Contact your favorite host and tell them to sign me up. Sign up today to reserve your spot. It's easy and affordable because it's how we're going to change the world through knowledge, joy, and pure excitement. So come along, join us as we learn, play, form deep new friendships, and become transformed. For more information, go to loaradionetwork.com. That's loaradionetwork.com. See you aboard the Elation on November 6th.
Well, welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Lloyd Pye and Anthony Bryce on 6 Degrees. And before the break, I wanted to point the audience to the StarChildProject.com. That is the StarChildProject.com. StarChildProject.com. And on the website, Lloyd, you have, and it's a wonderfully designed website, you have Skull Basics on here, and I really, really am, and even when I read the book, The Star Child Skull, there's just this indisputable enigma that just begs the question, where in the world did this come from? And it's the bone of the skull contains microscopic fibers that have never been seen before in the bone of any animal.
That's right. Not just fibers, but also a reddish residue that was found in its cancellous holes that also is not known in any other species of animal after a significant time after death, because, as you may know, when we die in the wild in natural circumstances, Mother Nature has a system built in to reduce us down, dust to dust, reduce us down to absolutely our molecules. There are bacteria that will consume our soft parts, and then other bacteria, mold, and fungi will consume our bones. So the marrow inside our bones is absolutely cleaned out slick, and we have pictures of what it's supposed to look like, and then you see the pictures of the star child and the red residue that's in there. Now, were that to be marrow, let's just say somehow 900 years the bacteria didn't clear out all the marrow. Well, it would, if it was that, it would be black because, as you know, blood oxidizes to a very dark black color. So it's not marrow. We don't know what it is. And as far as the fibers and the red residue, we just have never had the money to do anything, hardly, but we've tried to put the money that we get into the things that are important, like the DNA testing and the many other tests that we had done. But to pay for that, to get those fibers and the red residue recovered, we would have to pay for the invention of the protocols to recover the stuff, never seen before. There's no tools around that would allow for the pristine recovery of it. And then you'd have to go about the process of figuring out what to test for out of all the hundreds and thousands of possible tests that are there. What do you go for? And it's just, you see what I mean? The cost of it just became astronomical when we started looking into it, and we just realized, we couldn't do that. We'd have to save our efforts for the DNA, because when we get the correct DNA answer, if we get the correct DNA answer, and I'm sure that we will, then the star child becomes like Otzi, the frozen Neolithic hunter that was found under the glacier in Australia in Austria in 1991. They have done, science has done every conceivable test on it that you can imagine. They've spent, I think last count I read, was about $25 million. So all of that will be done to the star child, and then some. Anything anybody can think of will be done at that point. But it isn't going to happen until DNA proves to scientists that it's okay to research this thing, that they're not going to be chastised and driven out of the club by their peers who don't approve of this sort of thing. You have to force those people into the background, which is what, thank goodness, what DNA can do. If there's one thing in the world that will shut science up, it's DNA. It'll shut anybody up. I mean, you can have a murder case where all kinds of witnesses say somebody did it, all the police believe somebody did it, all the evidence points in that direction, except if the DNA says they didn't do it, they didn't do it. That's it. All the other stuff has to be discarded, because DNA is just simply not wrong, because it is math turned into biology. It's just, that's how precise it is. It's math.
Mm. You mentioned earlier in the conversation that you're pretty sure that the star child's skull is a result of genetic engineering, and also that you're also pretty sure that humans are the result of genetic engineering, Lloyd. You wrote this other book, and I don't want to deviate too much. All we know is wrong, or something to that effect. Can you? Because I know that has a lot to do with how you think and feel. And,
right.
And,
that book,
and integrate
everything.
That.
Yeah, Everything You Know Is Wrong was a book that I wrote back in 97, 98, came out late 97, and in 98, 99, 2000, in that area, it sold 30,000 copies, something like that, mostly out of the trunk of my car. So it's very popular in the field of alternative knowledge. I let it, though, go out of print in 2007, which was a mistake, and I apologize to everybody for that, because now people are having to pay like between $50 and $100 to get a used copy of it, and I'm very embarrassed by that. I'm trying to do an updated version of it, but in that book, Yeah, I've done the research that indicates to me that human beings have been genetically engineered, and I go over what I think is obvious evidence, the fusing of our second and third chromosomes and the genetic reversals, segment reversals in, almost a dozen of our other genes. Those are things that just don't happen, really shouldn't happen in nature. They're too precise. That have to have happened in a lab. But you can't get, of course, scientists or geneticists to acknowledge this because of what it means, which is that, we didn't evolve from a common ancestor with apes and gorillas. And as soon as that's out of the bag, like you were saying earlier, the whole world changes. It's just a different reality for everyone at that point. So nobody wants that to happen on their watch because of all the ripple effects of bad news that's going to bring for them, all the books that have to be written, all the embarrassment that they're going to have to deal with, all of the back to the drawing board. It's just none of them that are in positions of power and authority in their fields want to deal with it, and I don't blame them. If I was them, I would feel exactly the same way. Let it happen on somebody else's watch, not mine, please, that kind of thing. But it's going to happen on somebody's watch. It has to, because it's the truth. It is real, and those things are going to happen. Same thing with the Star Child. And I think the Star Child is a product of genetic engineering simply because I don't believe you can get something that is as radically different as the Star Child is physiologically compared to a normal human. You can't get something that far different by just simple mating. I mean, let's talk about, for example, a liger, which is the hybridization of a lion and a tiger. There's not, you can see it's a hybrid. You can see the parts of the tiger. You can see the parts of the lion. You can see it, but it's still a big cat, and that it's not more significantly more like one than the other. You know what I'm saying? You look at the Star Child and you look at a human, you are looking at apples and oranges. You can't get something that far away by a sexual union. You can only get that, in my opinion, based on the knowledge that I've acquired over my years of studying into this, you can only get that from genetic engineering. So I'm just going on record with my assumption, my guess, which is that it's going to prove to be a genetically engineered hybrid with a gross imbalance in favor of the father, which is the alien. We know that the mother was human because we recovered its mitochondrial DNA. So the Star Child's mother was a human. But to say that doesn't mean that she had much of a role in it other than supplying its mitochondrial DNA, because that's what mothers do. If you have mitochondrial DNA, it came from your mother only, not your father. So I think it's going to prove to be something like 80% dad, 20% mom, 85% dad, 15% mom, 90% dad, 10% mom, something like that. It's going to be heavily, heavily skewed genetically in favor of its father, who I think was probably a gray alien, just because it looks so much like a gray alien and it's so incredibly different from a normal human skull.
Well, my question would be, if I was someone who wanted to be responsible for the DNA sequencing or financing the DNA sequencing, what would be the benefit, or how would the world be different once the completed DNA sequencing of the Star Child skull is done? I mean, I know that you don't have a crystal ball, but what do you see the world? How do you see the world being different with this knowledge known?
Well, it'll be very different. I mean, we'd all get up and go to work the next day the way we did the day before. I mean, it's not like it's earth-shaking in that sense. But what it does is it changes the dynamic of how we view ourselves in the grand scheme of things, I think. It puts us on a path, Anthony, to taking what I think is a rightful place that we should have at the Galactic Roundtable. Personally, my opinion is there are numbers of species out there. Like, for example, that wonderful bar scene in Star Wars. I think they're like that. I think a lot of them are human-like, but I think there are, you know, the ones that we always hear about in the reports. They're reptilians, they're insectoids, they're grays, they're the little fireplug people. There are any number of types out there, and let's just assume that they're familiar with each other, maybe even comfortable with each other. Anyway, let's assume that there's a galactic round table. We don't have a place at that table. We are, I think, right now considered for the most part a mistake. We have all the signs of a hurriedly thrown together species that is fundamentally a mistake. We show it in everything we do about how we handle ourselves on this planet. We are screwed up. And until we get our act together, we cannot take a place among those, quote, better species than us. And until we recognize them, that they're out there, and recognize our second-class level relative to them, and until we start moving toward striving to become a first-class citizen of the community of intergalactic whatever's out there, we're going to continue to just wallow, you know, foul our own nest the way we're doing. But when we, I think, get to the point of accepting that there, our, quote, betters are out there, maybe they will then acknowledge, you know, to us their presence openly, and they'll say, look, here's what you have to do to join us, to be part of us, to be part of the larger community that you're in amongst. And instead of you being the clowns of the universe, instead of you being the butt end of our jokes and the stuff like that, here's what you have to do. Maybe we'll start moving in the right direction. All speculation, just like what you said. But you're asking me, what do I think is the upside to somebody who might want to put money in it? None of us, I don't think, will live to see that happen. Maybe young kids today might, but it's going to take a lot of concerted effort on the part of all humanity. And I, just like Reagan said, nothing is going to pull humanity together like the idea that we are all part of a very larger picture. Not that necessarily, as Reagan said, we have to band together to fight a common enemy from out there. I don't think it's going to come to that. We could be taken out with one vial of a biological organism that would attack only our nervous system and kill us all and not bother the hair of another animal on the planet, if intelligent, really intelligent beings wanted to do that to us, or to each other for that matter. So if they have mastered DNA as well as I think they have, as well as the evidence indicates they have, you know, it's the old thing about your parents say to kids, listen, I brought you into the world and I can take you out, you know, that kind of thing. It's kind of like that. They brought us here, they put us here, and they can take us out. So I think they're hoping that we'll grow into a mature, grown-up attitude and role in the universe. And I think if the Star Child, if the acceptance of alien reality can do anything, it can give us that first tentative step in that, to me, correct direction.
And I think it all starts with the with just the thought process. Just, you know, as we think, so we become. You know, Lloyd, excuse me, the Star Child skull was 900 years ago in Mexico.
Right.
Alive. Yeah, the Star Child skull was not. The Star Child was alive 900 years ago in Mexico. 900 years ago, excuse me, in Mexico. What in the world was it doing there?
Well,
alive?
I have no idea. But I do know that, you know, who knows? It could have crashed in a. It'd been the survivor of a crash. It could have been a star being. I talk in the book about a woman named Paula Gunn Allen, who died last year, by the way, who was a professor emeritus at UCLA, and she was one of the country's great scholars on Native American peoples and their legends. She was part Native American and had been raised among them. And she contacted me very early into it as soon as she heard about the Star Child. She said, it's one of the star beings. I'm sure it is. Beings used to come down from the heavens, so the legend said, and women in isolated villages would be impregnated, barren women, and they would have a baby, and they would be told that you're going to have a baby, it's going to be very special, require very special care, and you and all of the village, and they would tell all the village, you are all responsible for this child. And when we come to get it in 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 years, it better be here and better be in good shape. And so they would do that. They would come back and get them. And somehow the Star Child seems to have fallen through the cracks. Now, that was what we believed initially, that it was, a child and that the female found with it with its mother and all that. We don't think that anymore. It was a grown-up. It was definitely a mature adult when it died. So it wasn't a child. So we don't know really what the situation was. I'm coming to think, well, maybe it was a downed pilot or of a craft, like what happened at Roswell. Could be any number of things. I have no idea. I have no idea. But it doesn't matter. What the key is, it's real, it's here, it exists. It can provide us the DNA to prove what we need to prove, so its backstory isn't essential relative to the fact that it is here, it's real, it exists, and we can make history with it.
Well, you are making history, and the history is made, Lloyd. I'm fully confident. I am so confident that your story and your work will not be in vain, because our world is rapidly moving towards disclosure, which your Star Child project will be a very integral part of. We have a Vanilla Smile in the chat room, and she's from the United Kingdom, and just wanted to thank them for all being there. We only have 10 more minutes left, Lloyd. What is your future? What is the future? What are you doing right now?
That's a good question. Right now, actually, I'm just finishing an e-book, a new e-book that's going to be like the Cliff Notes to the Star Child Skull book. For those people who want it in a tightly digestible capsule of lots of pictures and text boxes without a whole lot of writing in it, so that they can get it in a tight package. That ebook I'll be making available soon, and it will allow, I think, many, many more people. You know, it's a busy world, busy time. We're all snowed. We all have very little time to read. This is going to take less than an hour to go through and learn really the absolute most salient points about the Star Child situation, the whole story that we've talked about tonight, and, of course, much, much, much more. It'll be like over 100 images, and it'll do everything somebody needs to walk away from the experience and say, I understand completely what the Star Child is all about, and I understand completely why it's so important and why it's going to make history. That's the purpose of the ebook, and that's what I think it's going to do.
Well, I would encourage, thank you for that work for, that you're putting this ebook together, Lloyd, but I would definitely encourage the listeners to read the book, The Star Child Skull, because, Lloyd, your passion and your purpose and your mission is all in this book, and that's what's truly important in life is the heart of a man, and the heart and your passion and your purpose is just so clear and so eloquently said in this story of the Star Child Skull.
Well, the hope obviously is that people will, the ones that will take the time to look at the ebook and go through that, will get a strong enough taste and a strong enough understanding to want to know more, to want to know the background story, to want to meet some of the people and understand the mechanics of how the story unfolded. I mean, it's in the ebook, it's just boom, boom, boom. Here are the facts, here are the pictures, here's the proof, that kind of thing. Whereas in the book, as you know from having read it, the story unfolds. There's ups, there's downs, there's setbacks, there's moves forward. It's a tough row to hoe, and it's got a lot of drama, some pathos. It's a real true story. It's heartrending. It's heartwarming. It's got a lot to recommend it as a book, as a story. But for those who just want to, you know, just the facts, ma'am, Joe Friday kind of thing, that's what the ebook is going to be for. A lot of people have told me that that's something that I needed to do for it to give it a wider audience. And so hopefully the ebook will allow people to use it as a stepping stone into the story, the full story itself.
And Vanilla Smile in the chat room brought it to my attention. It's the heart of a human that really matters, not just the heart of a man. Thank you. That's one of the quotes from, I'm a practicing Buddhist, and that's one of the quotes from Nietzsche and Daishonin, the heart. It's the heart that truly matters. How about that, Vanilla Smile? What drives you? We don't have much time, Lloyd, but I really do want to know what has kept you and so focused over these years, over so many obstacles. You know, what keeps your heart focused?
I just believed all along that it was right, even when we had that horrible first DNA test in Vancouver, which I knew was wrong, but I couldn't get anybody else to believe it because, you know, who's going to believe me against geneticists? But yet they were wrong, and it took 3 years to prove it. That was the darkest time, those 3 years. And through all of it, I kept going because I just knew that I was right. I knew what the star child was. I knew from the physiological differences that those physiological differences couldn't be there if the DNA was the same as human DNA. The DNA had to be different. And I just lucked out, really, Anthony, in that they have developed a test that is going to allow the star child's DNA to be broken down and analyzed base pair by base pair, and that we will be able to compare it in great detail against a human, against a chimp, against a Neanderthal, like I said earlier. And so we're going to win. Well, I've known we're going to win for a very, very long time. And really, that's pretty much all I need is to know I'm right, and I will grind it out as long as it takes. And I knew that I was right. I still know that I'm right. And it's just a matter of finding the ways and means to prove it.
You know, Lloyd, you made mention earlier that that the human being, the genetically engineered human being, kind of being a a big mistake. Well, you know, I think what they did not, what they couldn't, the formula, or what they couldn't measure was the courage and the heart, again, that of people like yourself. You know, as limited as we are in our physicality, as limited as we are in our perception of this thing called life, we still have this this intuition and this heart that's just as immense as the universe itself. And I appreciate all your work that you've done for this planet.
Thank you. We're all, including me, a very interesting mix of outstandingly good qualities and dismally bad qualities. And when we let the dismally bad qualities dominate, as they tend to do among leaders, just why that is, I don't know, but I think history shows that that's true. You have those individuals like, you know, Mother Teresa and right on down the line, Mother Teresa and whoever else, Gandhi, Buddha, you know, all down the line, those special individuals who managed to rise above it all and shine through the muck. And because there is that quality in some of us, I like to think that there's some spark of it in all of us, even the worst of us. And if we give that the proper kind of foundation to grow in, maybe it will begin to overpower the dark side. You know, it could be a pipe dream. We could just be hopelessly wishing on that star, but maybe. And if, you know, if you do what you've always done, you get what you've always gotten. If we can change the landscape profoundly, which I think the star child or a White House a UFO landing on the White House lawn. An event like that could do it if we change the landscape that we all operate in that dramatically. Maybe new things will grow. Maybe good things will grow, and we will change fundamentally as a species. Maybe it could happen. Maybe it's all in our DNA. It just needs the opportunity to come out.
Well, thank you again for coming on to 6 Degrees for the second time. And that first, our first show, I would encourage the listeners to go into the archives and listen to the very first interview that we did back in January of 2008, so you could see the growth that has gone on since then. Speaking of that, what major events or what conventions have you talked to since then? We have about 3 minutes.
I just got back, Anthony, from a 9-week tour. I was 10 days in New Zealand, and I was home for here for a week in Florida. And then I was 7 weeks in Europe, and I've been back for 2 weeks since then. I was in Romania, Poland, Italy, Spain, and 3 lectures in England.
Well, it certainly sounds like the message is going out all around the world, and it's just a matter of time before the right
doing
person
all I can.
Comes along.
Yeah, doing all I can. We just got to find that right person. Exactly that. Anybody out there knows them, have them get in touch with me, please.
Well, how do they get in touch with you?
Lloyd@LloydPie.com, really easy. Lloyd@LloydPie.com. I'm not hard to find, just Google me.
There we go. That's LLOYD, correct?
Right, LLOYDPYE.
All right, PYE, not PIE, folks.
Right, PYE, right.
Well, next, thank you, Lloyd. Go ahead.
Okay. But you can Google PIE and it'll still go to me. So they'll say, you know, do you mean Lloyd Pie? So it'll work out.
Oh, well, wonderful. Everything has its place and time in this universe. Thank you again, Lloyd, for coming on. And all I can say is thank you for all the work that you've done.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure, and I look forward to being on at some point in the future.
Absolutely. Next week we have Donald Ware. Donald Ware will be talking about all of the different races that exist throughout our and coexist with us here on this planet at this time. I don't have it in front of us, but Donald Ware has been on the show for 4 times. This will be his 5th time on. Donald Ware is just a legend in the MUFON and the UFO community, and I just look forward to everyone tuning in next week to Donald's talk. Have a great, wonderful, wonderful world.
Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with another great show of 6 Degrees.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I think to myself.